and welcome to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Sam's still on his break, so you got me, Becky Friedman, and I am pleased to have in the studio this week Dan and Luke. How are you guys?
Always happy to be here.
Doing great.
Yeah, it seems like the weather kind of changed instantaneously into fall. I mean, people have gotten back to school, back to work, and done with their summer breaks, and then boom, all of a sudden, no more weather above 70 degrees for basically until, I don't know, July of next year or something like that.
My favorite comment I've seen so far on it was, holy crap, the weather just went from 90 to 55 like it saw a cop.
Well, yeah, I don't know that it really went from 90. Were we having those 90 degree days? Or did we go to 50? I think we've clicked on the heater in our abode maybe once so far.
I'm going to try to keep mine off for another week or two.
Oh, you're still holding out. How about you, Dan?
We had a hot water pipe leak, so the heater is on in our basement, but only to, you know, dry up the carpets.
To dry out. Okay, all right. So a little excess water there.
That's life.
So does this kind of seasonal change square with what we know about regular seasons, or does it seem to be foretelling major climactic shifts? I think that that's something that's been on the mind anytime we have a change in weather or a weather event like our thunder and lightning storms that we had, mm-hmm. which are pretty rare up here.
Very rare.
That was an amazing night, by the way.
And we say, hey, are these kinds of things the new normal? Are these what's going to become more common? And in terms of these interesting weather patterns, it looks like we might be getting more likelihood of things like thunder and lightning storms in the fall, which aren't usually a thing of the Pacific Northwest, right? And so we've got folks all around the world, young people, that on Friday did materialize and across the world for their action climate strike, their school's climate strikes. So it was really neat to see in both Seattle and Tacoma, where we had our biggest, our biggest groups of young people striking. In Tacoma, we had folks that were in People's Park, lots of kids that were there with their signs, with their posters, and they were really the ones running the mic. We also had them march to City Hall and have a gathering there. They invited older individuals to then take the mic and speak, but it was really definitely a youth-led action, and it was really neat to see. And the youth organizers then inviting protectors of the Salish Sea and saying, I want to invite our indigenous elders to participate in this as well and collaborate. And in Seattle, you know, you have kids that are marching through town and in 2,700 different locales having official school strikes, all motivated and inspired by this one teenage girl from Sweden, Greta Thunberg. And so I know that last week we were kind of looking forward to it and saying what's going to happen. And well, what happened is that you really did have young people take the helm. And it was something that was very uplifting to see. You know, I, as a teacher, I had one of my training days on that Friday, and I was sitting there, and every chance I got, I was looking and seeing, all right, what are they doing? What are the kids doing? What are they saying? What kind of media coverage are they getting? And I was pleased to see that there was legitimate media coverage. And with the exception of a few folks that really have used Ms. Thunberg as this focal point for insult, I mean, really, when you're looking at a 16-year-old girl as your focal point for insult and things like that, I think you gotta find a new outlet for your journalistic rage and ire.
Agreed.
But most of it was really positive. What did you guys see? I mean, Luke, up on the Kitsap Peninsula, were there any kind of actions? Did you talk about it with your kiddos?
I didn't do too much myself. There was a little bit of marching in Bremerton. It's not a huge community.
Okay. And Dan, I mean, this seems like it would be completely right up your alley, but you told me that you weren't present at any of the marches or protests or rallies.
I was not. I fully 100% support them, but I also had work to do, and my work is, well, as many people know, I'm an environmental educator, and to me, it would have been a little bit counterproductive to strike from that job since it's kind of already in the same vein.
So keep doing the good work.
Right. There's layers to it I can't quite put into words easily, but just it would have felt very strange to be like, all right, well, I'm not going to be working for Environmental Science Center teaching kids to preserve the environment today because I'm but I fully support those that were there.
And the cool things that were in conjunction with this particular climate strike was we have the UN Action Summit that's taking place tomorrow, Monday, September 23rd, when we have folks that are coming together, leaders of nations of different regions coming together to try and brainstorm and address what is happening and what is going to happen due to climate change. We had yesterday on September 21st, on that Saturday, a UN Climate Action Youth Summit that was really hosted by the UN with about 1,000 young people from across the world attending in person and more that were participating via online streams and things like that. But there's something that's troubling me about the way that this is being presented that I'm seeing a little bit more and more, and it kind of came to a head this weekend with a lot of the coverage about the climate strikes and the involvement in the protests. And that is that you have folks that seem to be of a particular bent that are presenting climate change activism or environmental activism as a religion. This is really a thing that stumps me. I mean, can you guys see any kind of parallels between your work or your activism or the activism of others and religion?
No.
Something that maybe gives you a life purpose, something that is inspiring, something that, you know, it can be a reason for keeping up the fight. That you definitely have to draw inspiration. And sometimes, I'll be quite honest, sometimes you feel that you're maybe not going to win, that you're fighting because of faith, that's what keeps you going. But my take on it is, in the environmental fight, things are pretty doom and gloom. Things look bad. We might not win. If we don't, well, that's kind of the end for humanity, except for the ultra wealthy. He'll probably survive for a while. And so if we all said, you know, we're not going to win, we give up, we definitely lose. But if we can continue the fight, we may have a 10, even 20% chance of succeeding. For me, I'm all about that 10 to 20% chance. I would much rather continue the fight until the absolute last possible breath. Otherwise, I don't think I could really look in the mirror.
Well, from what I've seen is most of the people that are fighting against people trying to stop climate change are afraid of changing the way of life that they've been living for the past forever. They're 50, 60-year-old Fox News viewers. Don't want to change how they live. And then these kids come in and they can't attack them based on the information they're providing because their information's accurate. So they have to reframe the argument and attack them specifically so they can actually make themselves feel successful.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned two things there. One is reframing and the other is the F word, right?
Fox
so
News.
Yeah. We actually had Buck Sexton. He's a commentator on Fox News's Outnumbered program, as if, you know, oh, we're so poor and aggrieved and outnumbered in our political views. But he actually asserted something. Yeah, hopefully one can hope. But he actually asserted that climate change is a religious belief for people who think they're too smart for religion. So there's one thing here that really kind of gets me, is that there's plenty of religious folks that are also on board with trying to do something about protecting the environment and preserving different things and using technology to assist in rectifying some of the damage that we've already done and things like that. And so to say that climate change is a religious belief, one, no.
No, it's not. It has very strong and compelling evidence.
On evidence.
But climate change activism, you know, as something to do for folks that are too smart for religion, is he actually just suggesting there that if you are not smart, or if you are smart in some kind of, I don't know, capacity, that you will eschew religion? Is he like just kind of dropping this thing that, like, if you're with religion, then you're not smart?
Well, as we know, the educated liberals are destroying the world.
To me, this comes off as like it's classic yep. abuser speak. This is projection. This is where you tell your victim that they are doing exactly what you yourself are doing. He's saying that believing in climate change is a religion for people who think that they're too smart for religion. I would posit that climate denial is a religion for people who think they're too smart for science.
Oh, burn.
So are we being gaslighted by Fox News again then?
We're literally being fossil fuel lit by by Fox News, yes.
Well, in this particular discussion, his co-host, that's Melissa Francis, actually followed up that by claiming that liberals, specifically MSNBC viewers, have, I know, right, have forgotten about God, so they're worshiping the environment instead. So, Dan, please tell me all the ways in which you worship the environment.
You know, I like to go outside and see that my planet is a beautiful place. and you know, every once in a while, I'd like to drink some maple sap and take communion eating a dried chanterelle or something. I don't know. This is nonsense. I mean, there is such a thing as nature worship. And, you know, as far as things you're going to worship, you might as well worship a thing that's actually real. But the way that people who are very theistic think about religion, spirituality, or worship of anything is very, very different from the way that hippies like myself or animists or pagans actually interact with their sort of spirituality of the natural world. They're very different ideas.
When you think about worshiping, you're thinking about offering either words of prayer or offering specific items and leaving them in specific places, like at shrines or on altars, maybe burning things, maybe giving a blessing and then consuming them. And to, you know, to say that any of those things are happening, I mean, when just because you have an opening remark at the beginning of a rally, or just because you say, wow, I'm really pleased with my tomato plants and how they did this summer, and then Instagram them all, right? I mean, if that's your line for what worshiping is and religion is, then why bother even calling it a religion?
Right. Eat of these heirloom tomatoes, for it is my flesh.
So, you know, it's not just Fox News, though. This is the kind of thing that's striking me. And it would be easy to write off if it was just something like Fox News, because they specifically, you know, name drop MSNBC viewers. And it seems to be just this big battle of ratings and viewership numbers. But we have folks outside the United States and outside, seemingly outside the Fox News bubble, where you've got conservative political and social commentator Andrew Bolt from Australia. And this is a guy who is a little bit new to me, but looking into him, I can't find much of anything that I agree with. But he actually said that he has this very provocative op-ed, and he contends that climate strikers are so blinded by faith that they can't see actual facts. And this is how he was describing how young protesters at Friday's climate strike shouted in excitement that they were defending science, but instead they were hot gospeling for a new religion where faith counts more than facts. You know, if anything was about projection, right, Dan, what you were saying a minute ago?
That's another prime example. And this is a thing that we see all the time. If you're a part of the environmental movement and you're at a restaurant and chatting with somebody and they say, oh, so what do you do? I say, well, I'm an environmental educator. And they'll go, oh. And they'll give you their whole spiel of beliefs about how they think that, you know, oh, you know, those people who are all about climate change and stuff. I'm like, yes, I do. I know those people very well. Please go on. And they'll go on for quite a long time about all of the sort of mass media informed misconceptions that they have about the movement, about human impact. But, you know, if you go and ask them a question about ecology, say, so what do you think humans using fertilizer has done to the nitrogen cycle? They'll just give you the deer in the headlights. They don't know what fertilizers are, what they're derived from. They don't know what the nitrogen cycle is. And it just sort of exposes that they're completely uninformed about the thing that they're claiming to be an expert on. They're saying that oh yeah, I know better. I know science. Well, when you ask them, they actually don't.
So would you consider that is an aspect of faith for those individuals who are challenging you?
I don't know if it's faith or Dunning-Kruger or if there's even a big difference between those two things, actually, come to think of it.
What you should do is ask them if they like fishing and then talk about the Hood Canal.
You know, when I volunteer at the zoo, that's actually one of the places I like to start. We have a sea lion at the zoo and aquarium where I like to volunteer. The sea lion's name is Chinook, and people ask, you know, why has he got those brands on his back? And we talk about how the sea lion used to hang out at the base of the Bonneville Dam, was eating a lot of endangered Chinook salmon, and people go, well, darn those sea lions, they're eating all the salmon. It's, well, hang on. Can you really blame this sea lion for hanging out in a 1 mile wide river at a 30 foot wide point where all of the salmon are bottlenecked in one place? And furthermore, sea lions going up rivers is not a normal behavior pattern. He wouldn't be doing that if it weren't for the dam. And, you know, I tell them about, you know, what happens when a salmon tries to go up a high salmon ladder, the 10% of them die of exhaustion on the first attempt. Eventually you can get to the point where you like salmon fishing. I like salmon fishing. Let's address the real problems here. And, you know, sometimes when somebody has an extreme conservative viewpoint, but you find out that they're also a sports person, they're an outdoors person of some kind. They like to go fishing. They like to go hunting. They like to go camping. It can be a great way to start to build that bridge and be like, hey, you know, this isn't about liberals. This isn't about hippies. It's about, you know, I want my nieces and nephews to be able to enjoy the outdoors too. Don't you want your kids and grandkids to be able to as well?
I love going out on the trails and in the mountains and the forests, and I know a lot of conservative people that like to do that too. And what we do is we talk about that and how logging and fish issues are affecting our hobbies outside of work. And we can usually find common ground there. Unfortunately, it's not working out with the climate change thing so well lately.
Well, is there a point that we can link those things, that climate change is something that can be linked to those outdoor enthusiasts that oftentimes are also of conservative political views and maybe very religious individuals? Is it not just about let's preserve the number of, you know, of these animals that are in this particular area so I can hunt them? Is there something about climate change and reducing meat consumption and fossil fuel use that can speak to those individuals as well? What do you guys think?
Well, I think God said to be good stewards of the earth, and clearly we're failing at it. So if you believe in God and you believe in the scripture, I think you have to take a look in the mirror and be like, am I doing what I was asked to do?
It's an interesting thing because we do see it participating in a lot of these events that are for climate change activism. We do see a presence by religious individuals, by churches, by synagogues, by religious denominations and movements. And they point to exactly those things, parts of the scripture where it says that, you know, the earth is a gift from God. Now, I don't believe that the earth is a gift from God. I just believe that earth is the only place we have to live at this current moment before we can go and terraform some other off-world planet or moon.
Yeah,
sooner rather than later, hopefully.
Any technology that we'll develop in order to terraform another planet, we're going to have to develop here first, because if we're going to clean things up, if we're going to learn how to conserve water, if we're going to learn how to use our resources sustainably, boy, Earth is a paradise. We have tons of water, a great atmosphere. We have all the resources we need. If we can't manage this, we haven't got a snowball's chance in hell of building a colony on Mars.
Now, the amount of water that disperses all of our pollution here is insane compared to what we'd have available on a Martian or a moon base. We have to be able to do this first.
There's one more very provocative headline that I want to sort of pick through and unpack a little bit. And this comes from the Wall Street Journal. So again, you know, linked with Fox News since it's, you know, all of Murdoch.
Murdoch Empire.
The editor at large, who used to be the chief editor at the Wall Street Journal, he has this op-ed that boasts the headline, Saint Greta Spreads the Climate Gospel, right? And this is in reference to Greta Thunberg. It's Gerard Baker, who's the editor at large. He claims that a kind of climate theology has replaced traditional Christianity as the ultimate source of authority over human behavior, comprising both an all-embracing teleology of our existence and a prescriptive moral code. So these are very provocative things. It's not just general name-calling. I would say that there's even maybe a little bit of insight into these. But he then goes on to characterize the climate activists as possessing near-religious fervor that recalls some of the more troubling traits of extreme religious cults. And that's where he loses me.
Well, Gerard Baker, you've just described my perfect utopian society where people actually do have a religious fervor about protecting their climate, and there are ethics and morals involved that people actually care about. So thank you, Gerard, for giving me a beautiful daydream.
All right, so Dan is leader of a extreme religious cult, right?
Yeah, that's me. Yeah. At least twice. Not on purpose.
One of the things that this speaks to for me is that you have environmentalism as a prescriptive moral code, and what's being tossed around in my head is this is for someone that cannot consider anything bigger than oneself as anything other than religion, right? If you have something guiding you that's not solely within yourself, it must be religion. And it speaks to something that is like, it belies their conception of what an atheist is, right? I mean, how often have you gotten from someone, from a religious individual, oh, you're an atheist? That means you think you are God, or you are your only, you know, moral arbiter of everything, right? Everything rests with you, and so you can be as selfish as you want. I mean, how often have you guys gotten that?
A couple of times.
Yeah. In fact, this is such a common occurrence that one of our guests today mentioned the Gospel of Darwin that we're all accused of following.
Yeah, I mean, it's from last week when we had the school board president that said, oh, well, you know, Darwin hasn't done anything with his theory since the mid-1800s. Why are we still doing it? Well, no, we don't have a fixed gospel.
He died. That's why he hasn't done anything new. He died.
These science isn't fixed, right?
No,
we're always
not
adding to science.
Right.
To have that body of knowledge that can guide us. But in terms of looking at a prescriptive moral code, I could take something like humanism and its aspirations, also called the Humanist Manifesto, and I could say, I want this and I accept this as my prescriptive moral code. And in that, I would kind of be doing something that's antithetical to the the aspirations embedded therein, but that I could see someone arguing that that's a religion or that's a religious dogmatic belief. If I take these things as gospel, as fixed, as something that is prescribed to me as a moral code that I have no influence in whatsoever. But when you look at what does it look like to be an environmental activist? What does it look like to be a humanist? What does it look like to recognize that this is the earth we have now? Do you feel like things are prescriptive? Do you feel like things are fixed? Well, that's a pregnant pause.
I don't think that things are fixed at all. A lot of the things that we have learned in just the past 100 years of trying to do ecological restoration have had to change. And that's part of the evolving science of ecology. If we said, you know, the best thing that we can do in every situation is just plant more trees, well, we would destroy a lot of biomes that are providing very valuable ecosystem services. For starters, oceans and lakes, but also deserts and grasslands. They have their own specific things that they do for us that aren't exactly clear, or at least weren't 100 years ago, and we're still learning more.
Right. We didn't realize 100, 150 years ago that our industrial processes were potentially going to kill us all. And it's something we're just figuring out, and we just started, like, what, 30 years ago?
Well, you heard it here. If you're looking for some prescriptive moral code, use Ask an Atheist. No, don't use Ask an Atheist.
We've been down this road. I hate it.
You're listening to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. We'll be back after the break. Hello, and welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Got a question from one of our listeners, Charles from Queensland, who says, recently a Jehovah's Witness approached me and said, I'd like to prove that God isn't responsible for catastrophes that people blame him for recently. And all I could think was, whoa, there's so many assumptions in that sentence. Luke, can you unpack one of those assumptions for me?
Well, I think I need to hear his proof just to see what it was. I'd like to actually hear that. But you know,
proving that God
isn't responsible for catastrophes. So who's responsible for catastrophes at that point? Then if you're religious,
Is it that God's still responsible for the catastrophes that people don't blame him for recently?
Isn't God supposed to be all-powerful and creator of all things?
Well, if he's all-powerful and creator of all things, I suppose that he could choose which ones he wants to be responsible for.
But that means he's responsible for all of them.
Oh, well, you know how easily people shirk responsibility.
Well, yeah.
What does this mean to you, Dan? Proving that God isn't responsible for something.
Proving that God isn't responsible for something. Well, I feel like I could do the same thing. I'm like, oh yeah, I could prove that as well because your God's not real. But I just like the number of specifics in here. I'd like to prove that God isn't responsible for catastrophes that people blame him for recently. So I guess you're going to prove that he is responsible for the ones that we don't blame him for, or for the ones that happened not recently but in the past, or
how far back?
Right. I mean, how far back
is the recent hurricanes his fault, but like Puerto Rico not?
Which catastrophes?
Yeah, which ones? Definitely.
You know, like I stubbed my toe the other day and I didn't blame God for it. I blamed me because it was, you know, a dark room and I was being clumsy. But
is
like,
that your definition of catastrophe, Dan?
Well, I'm trying to think of small and large catastrophes that things were, you know, blamed or not blamed for. I don't even really know where to go with this. This sounds like the kind of argument that comes about because perhaps this Jehovah's Witness thought that people are atheists because they're mad at God for, you know, creating pain or catastrophe or something like that.
I know,
dude, that's not why.
No, I agree. I've known a few that were headed that way because of catastrophes, but yeah, no.
It's interesting when we see things like a publication recently from 538.com, the statistical analysis blog, that asserted that that the Christian right, that the religious right, is turning off people from religion altogether. Not just very conservative religion, right? It's not that people are going from being a Southern Baptist or a Jehovah's Witness or an Orthodox Jew to, oh, I'm just going to be a Unitarian and a Methodist that, like, you know, wants to break off from the Methodist Church and invite everyone and be radically inclusive. You know, we have things that say because the religious right is doing things like blaming hurricanes and tornadoes and earthquakes on the existence of gay folks.
Right.
Or on the fact that someone is wearing a particular style of dress that they believe to be too provocative, or that our laws permit women to have full autonomy over their reproductive health. Right. We see that. It's not just those folks that are turning away individuals, but we have publications that are saying that kind of vehement extremist religious right is turning away people altogether from religion.
From what I understand, there's been a long trend of the moderate and more liberal churches losing members over time, but for a long time, the far right, more conservative and evangelical churches were gaining people. And now they've gone they jumped the shark recently, especially with the president and their all-out support of a guy that's so morally inept. Morally inept, is that a thing?
Sure.
It wasn't until Donald Trump was sworn in.
Yeah, well, with the political structure or political happenings we have going on right now, people are jumping off from those religions now, too, those churches, and just giving up on religion altogether. And those are conservative people that you wouldn't expect to do that. And it's just surprising and nice.
So there are lots of ways to arrive at atheism. And some of them may be, I just don't feel connected to being religious anymore. You know, whether that means that you've examined your belief on whether a God exists or not, or whether you've examined whether you really even had a belief in God to begin with. Like, I think that it's perfectly fine to acknowledge that not everyone who arrives at atheism is there and believes that, you know, has essentially done the homework, so to speak. You know, folks are being born second, third, fourth generation into non-religious families. But it does kind of hearken to this, hey, you're an atheist because you think God, you're mad at God for, I don't know, taking your parents away or for this disaster.
Right.
Well, no, it's that God isn't responsible for this terrible catastrophe. God planned it so he can bring you into heaven. I mean, those are the really weird, insidious lines of reasoning that I've heard.
Those ones have always bothered me. Your horrible suffering has been part of God's plan.
Don't worry, he's got a plan.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't a very good plan.
Sounds like your particular God is kind of a jerk.
Well, another thing that this kind of brings into my mind is something that will be coming out a little bit more, and atheists may feel a little bit of mourning over this, because actor Brad Pitt has revealed that he only called himself an atheist out of rebelliousness. Speaking with GQ magazine, Pitt admitted that he'd always questioned the Christianity that he'd grown up with, but started calling himself an agnostic as a young adult and then atheist. Pitt stated that the label was punk rock enough at the time, but he now reluctantly espouses a belief in spirituality and connectedness. Pitt was speaking about how he personally related to the themes present in his latest film, Ad Astra.
So I'm right now wearing a Bad Religion t-shirt.
Oh,
just saying.
True, really punk rock atheists. But has being called an atheist or adopting the label of atheist being punk rock at all in the last like 15 years or so? Bad Religion excluded.
They're like a nearly 40-year-old band, so they're just not cool anymore, you know? Punk rock, atheism isn't cool anymore, you know? It's not the radical thing that everybody used to think it was. Now everybody's just like, religion's dumb.
I didn't really feel like atheism was ever like punk rock. Like, I felt like it was kind of at best Dungeons and Dragons. Like, it wasn't quite, it was like, we're not quite punk rock by being like, yeah, I don't really believe that.
I like to mix my punk rock and Dungeons and Dragons, so I mean, it's just how I go.
I'm an atheist, and I'm a teacher that gets up and does personal fitness at the community center doing side stroke in the pool. I am the least punk rock that you could ever think of. I mean,
can confirm.
Would you like a cup of tea? I'll make you a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, sweetie. I mean, that's me, and like, I am not punk rock. I don't think even in 2004, when Brad Pitt was at his height of, you know, with Angelina Jolie and saying that we are activists and we don't believe in God and sort of really being celebrated as a very public person that is non-religious, I don't even think that it was very punk rock at that time. But here's also the thing that strikes me. He, you know, was saying, oh, you know, I hate to say it, but I have this belief in spirituality. He's embarrassed and reluctant to say that he's spiritual, possibly because there's, I don't know, a lot of things wrapped up in when people call themselves spiritual.
Right. And plus, you know, are men allowed to be spiritual?
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, is this a bite at his masculinity? He's interviewing for GQ magazine, right?
I could see a lot of people using it that way.
Brad Pitt now wearing long, flowy purple dresses and buying crystals.
He's part of the no shampoo movement, and
right.
But I mean, like, he's reluctantly saying, I have a belief in spirituality. And when pressed on what his belief in spirituality is, it's, we are all connected. That doesn't seem exceedingly like weird. It's not something that I would say that one needs to be embarrassed about believing and feeling.
We are actually a vast and interconnected network of humanity.
Yeah, not to get back up on the ecology soapbox, but scientifically speaking, you're not wrong. And if that gives you a spiritual feeling, cool.
I don't even see it as precluding an atheistic sort of stance either.
No.
I mean,
no.
One can be an atheist and not believe in a God, and then also recognize that, okay, you can say you are matter and you matter. Right?
Right.
Saying, going from that very scientific and material belief and understanding that everything is made up of matter, and making that leap to say, and because of that, and because we have consciousness, we actually matter to each other,
mm-hmm.
doesn't seem to be incompatible with being an atheist. And so I'm going to challenge Brad Pitt a little bit on this. You know, you may have grown up with your Southern Baptist mentality. You may have always questioned it as a kid. You may have thought that you were being punk rock and awesome and cool in the 90s and the mid 2000s by calling yourself an atheist. But I don't think that you need be embarrassed by calling yourself an atheist. And I don't think you need be embarrassed or regretful of saying you have a spiritual belief. And I think that as long as you continue to do good and be good, there's nothing that is inherently terrible about that, and there's nothing inherently, I don't know, turncoaty to atheism by saying like, I don't know, I didn't really think too hard about it. I just rejected religion and now I'm just kind of spiritual. Like it is another way that people are atheistic and people are just, you know, without religion. Not everyone has to get there through vigorous debate.
Right. Yeah, I think Mr. Pitt might find that he has a lot more in common with a lot of atheists than he might think.
And that he might have a lot more in common with religious people than he might think. Do you think, guys, that like people have a lot in common with each other? People?
It's almost as if we're all connected.
Ooh. So speaking of debate and things like that, this brings me to an email. Mike from the internet says, my question is in reference to logic. In deductive arguments, is validity the same as sound? I only ask because the definition of validity confuses me. And then he gives a quote, the quality of being logically or factually sound, soundness or cogency.
Well, it sounds like the literal definition that you found confirms that being, or that validity and soundness are synonymous. But this seems like such a potentially interpretable statement. My first impression is like, boy, you don't need an atheist for this. You need like a lawyer and a linguist. We happen to have a linguist here.
As long as you understand that sound is talking about something that's solid or well built, as opposed to
audible. Yeah, or the body of water. You know, that's in
right.
Our Puget Sound, also called Salish Sea. Things can have multiple meanings, but when you're looking at trying to build an argument on what's valid. Yeah, you're looking at what has evidence to support it. What are your commentaries and pieces of evidence from multiple sources that lead you to believe that something is credible and well-built? That's all that sound means. You know, it also makes me think that sometimes in some circles where deductive reasoning and logic is held in very high esteem, and those who can do deductive logical reasoning and debate and oratory are held in very high esteem. Sometimes I want to remind folks that there is a space for those of us who maybe aren't as well versed in those kinds of things. Just like, I don't know, I mean, Brad Pitt, if he says that he was an atheist because it was super punk rock and now he's just like, man, I'm just kind of spiritual because I like feeling that we're all connected because I did this movie about, you know, outer space and stuff. Like, that's cool, too. To be an atheist doesn't mean you have to be, you know, at a podium debating a fervent Christian. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, and we'll be back after the break. Hello, and welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. You know, the climate strike was not the only thing that happened this weekend, guys. I've been so super excited to see how this actually turned out. The Area 51 event, the Alien Stock Festival, the moment when all of the internet Kyles and other meme associated people would storm the secretive base and see them aliens. Have you guys been like counting down to this with excitement?
I kind of forgot it was happening.
I had a vague idea it was happening and I was trying to follow the news to see what was going to be going on because I'm vaguely interested in it, but, you know, I was hoping nobody would get hurt.
So a satirical event that had more than 3 million Facebook users, 3 million guys, 3 million, 3 million Facebook users threatening to storm the U.S. Air Force's Area 51 training base resulted in fewer than 100 people milling about the gate of the secretive facility and only around 3,000 travelers attending a related music festival. Organizer Maddie Roberts had canceled the proposed raid last week and urged people to stay away from the rural area in Nevada, citing the potential for a humanitarian disaster. Despite the U.S. military's PR branch tweeting a photo of a bomber and threatening that the aircraft would be the last thing any millennial saw if they tried to breach security, only one attendee was arrested after being caught urinating near the gate. I'm not done, Dan. Most others just gathered with signs and costumes, with one enthusiast enacting a Naruto run behind a television news reporter in homage to the originally proposed method of entry into the military facility. There was a reported injury, guys. I'm really sorry to say, to report that a visitor collided with a cow, and the cow didn't make it.
A visitor collided with a cow.
Yes, and not of the extraterrestrial visitor variety, just, you know, a visitor to the area.
Just a regular visitor.
Yeah, car wreck. Car wreck involving cow.
Oh.
Because we're in the middle of nowhere, Nevada, population 143.
Cows.
Nope, humans. Many probably, more cows.
It's probably like 300 or 400 cows.
There is the nearest gas station is 50 miles away from this location. Only Verizon gets spotty cell phone coverage. This is wow. So rural that the biggest news is someone pees on a gate and...
Yeah, and gets arrested.
Yeah.
So just like any other Facebook event, like only a small percentage of the people that said they were going to go actually showed up.
Certainly. So this has been following me since the summertime when this guy decided I'm going to win internet meme-dom and propose an event where we go and look at aliens. And I really had it in my heart. I thought that this was Storm Area 51 to see the aliens. I thought it was like a tongue-in-cheek way to say that we as U.S. citizens should stand up for the rights of detained migrants and demand their release. But no, it was just an internet meme. Like I was, yeah. And then you had people joining on that were saying, really thinking that, you know, Area 51 still holds, you know, flying saucers that have been recovered by U.S. military. And they're keeping this knowledge of extraterrestrial intelligent life that has visited our planet. You know, they're keeping it there. And I say, use your skeptical brain, guys.
Not sure they have that.
I'm guessing that the 100 or so people that showed up were like the small percentage that did not realize the whole thing was satirical.
There were, you know, various media outlets, you know, interviewing folks and saying, hey, I drove here and I just was really hoping for this camaraderie event, something that would be really cool, something that would be out in the middle of nowhere. This is a place I've never been to. And then folks that were kind of like having fun dressing up as aliens and having big posters and I think wanting their 15 minutes of fame, perhaps.
Did they know about Burning Man?
Yeah, because that's a big desert event. You can have costumes. You can make signs. You're right.
Probably going to see a lot more things that appear alien at Burning Man than you are at Area 51.
Don't you have to be moderately wealthy to go to Burning Man now, though?
Perhaps. No. I don't know. You could just show up. You probably won't be arrested if you pee on something.
That's true.
Either.
I mean, everybody's peeing on everything there. So,
I think here also the story that was really funny to me was, or funny or frightening, I'm not sure which, you had a deleted tweet from the PR branch of the U.S. military saying, we're going to threaten you with fighter aircraft, right?
A bomber, yeah.
Specifically millennials, though.
Oh, right.
This will be the last thing any millennials see.
Because
millennials are trying to sort out their bills right now.
Yeah.
Guys, I want to say this again for the entire country. Millennials are approaching 40.
Yeah, we go to the swimming pool at the community center for personal fitness.
Most of their children are nearly teenagers now.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if they had, yeah.
So hopefully, you know, the military has gotten a hold on whoever made that tweet. They've since deleted it and issued an apology saying it was completely inappropriate because I don't know. Something tells me that the military threatening its own citizens with fighters, you know, is maybe frowned upon a little bit. So, you know what else is frowned upon? Kicking people out of your establishments because the people happen to be gay, right?
Yeah, that's not cool.
No. Yeah, Uber has severed ties with a driver who kicked two women out of her car because they were gay. Kristen Gauthier shared a peck on the cheek with her girlfriend Megan about 4 minutes into their ride when the driver, only known as Cynthia, stopped the vehicle and demanded they get out. Gauthier began recording the encounter with her phone and asked the driver if she was being kicked out for being gay. The driver responded yes as she reached back and tried to swat the cell phone away. Although the driver asserted that she could refuse any ride she wanted, Uber policies explicitly forbid discrimination based on sexual orientation, as does New Jersey state statute regarding public accommodation. Do you think that we're ever going to see the ends of this?
No.
Taxi rides, wedding cakes.
I'd like to, but
floral arrangements.
I'm guessing the Liberty Institute's going to use this as a new lawsuit fodder.
It's also scary because we had a court in Arizona say that an artist who runs a business making wedding invitations and other event invitations can refuse to do a custom wedding invitation for gay folks but the gay folks are welcome to utilize any of the prefab, you know, pre-made invitations. And the court said, yeah, that's legit. That's okay. And so I don't think that we're seeing the end of this. I think that those kinds of events and those kinds of things are emboldening people to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to use my religious feelings to say, I don't want to see you. I don't even want to know that you exist. I don't want to help your existence in any way whatsoever.
This is, from what I've gathered, actually a burgeoning newer movement where they're trying to use their religion to deny people they don't like services and rights. And it's becoming more popular and seeing activity across the country.
And it's, you know, we look at this and we say, hey, you know, it seems like every month someone pops up with a, you kicked me out of your Uber because I'm gay, or you won't let me eat in your restaurant because I am a man who is wearing a dress, or you won't give me a floral arrangement for anything other than my just general Fridays. But if I want to get married, then no, no, no. You want to turn me away from getting my completely legal prescription because of your religious beliefs. You want to turn me away because I happen to be unmarried and yet living with someone that I am having intimate relations with. These are things that it seems like are coming up every single month for the past, I don't know, how long have we been doing this show, Ask an Atheist? And one thing that I can say that I think buoys me a little bit in the face of this is that I think that it's kind of like these death rattles, right? This movement and this ability to discriminate against others based on your religion is dying. And when you're dying, you're going to give the biggest cries to hang on to something else.
I really hope that's it.
And the other thing is that you have many religious people that are saying, it's, you weren't bothered before. They're calling out their religious peers on their hypocrisy. You weren't bothered before by the fact that there was a gay person in your cab, right? You didn't question anyone before marriage equality became law of the land, whether they were what their sexual orientation was before you gave them a cab ride or before you wrote something on a birthday cake, right? So why now? And I would love to see more religious peers calling that out and saying, you know what, you can operate your own business and you can worship in your own way on your day and in your home. You know, but once you decide to enter the world of this pluralistic, mixed capitalist economy, you know, where we have rights that protect the minority, you know, you gotta make some serious decisions here. And that includes, you know, serving people in public accommodations.
Right. This is something that always bothers me when it's like, I have, you know, the right to practice my religion. Absolutely. Yes, you do. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, my freedom of religion says I don't have to serve you because you're gay.
No.
Not exactly. Your right to practice your religion shouldn't really have any bearing on anyone else. Maybe you think that I am wrong because I live in a polyamorous relationship. Maybe you think that I am wrong because I am not a Christian. So what? Let me be wrong. It doesn't affect you in any way.
The problem is if you are wrong to them, some sort of punishment is definitely required.
I believe that is strictly for their God to decide.
I agree with you on that one.
Yeah. Let us be wrong. It's okay. It's all right.
Well, I think that this calls to mind something that thankfully we do not have in the United States, but folks in other places and other regions of the world are facing these inability to let someone be wrong to the degree that it's not just kicking someone out of your Uber or refusing to give them a birthday cake or a wedding cake. It's to the point of threatening someone's life. Around 50 people have been arrested in Pakistan in connection with rioting that erupted when a student accused his Hindu principal of blasphemy against Islam. The comments allegedly involved insults against the Prophet Muhammad. An irate mob then attacked the school, a Hindu temple, and shops thought to be owned by Hindus. The principal faces the death penalty if convicted under the country's blasphemy code, while 43 individuals face lesser charges and penalties under the same code for their part in desecrating the temple. Dan, I know that when we were talking before the show, this really got under your skin, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, what really gets under my skin about it, it's like, all right, so you want to kill this guy for allegedly saying something that may have been blasphemous. But you're going to give lesser charges to the people who actually desecrated a temple, who destroyed businesses, who actually created real pain, destruction, and challenge in this world? Why is that a lesser charge? What is going on here?
A thing that we'll never know also is that the alleged comments can never be brought to light, because if one believes in Pakistan that those comments that he made are blasphemous, it would thereby be blasphemy to even utter those things in court to examine whether they were blasphemous in the first place.
These laws are used very often to actually attack minorities in Pakistan. Christians and Hindus, they're used to strip them of property, throw them in jail for years at a time with very little in the way of trial. It's kind of a horrible way to punish people for not being Muslim.
Oh, like it's just sort of profit-motivated racism.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Well, the other thing,
with this.
Since the majority of individuals in Pakistan are Muslim, it is used percentage-wise against Muslim people at a really high rate as well, because either you are part of a sect that we don't believe
right.
is pious enough, or because we don't think that your observance of the Muslim faith is as it should be, or even worse, in interpersonal and financial disputes. Imagine, Dan, you know, you're doing work on your home and I'm your neighbor, and your fence happens to be a little bit rotted through. You haven't gotten to it yet. You know, you're going to replace the fence boards. But in the meantime, your animal gets out of your yard, comes into mine, and kills my chickens and destroys my garden.
Geez, I'm really sorry. I'll replace the chickens and I'll have your garden replanted.
So here's the thing. It would be very easy for me to accuse you of blasphemy, thereby tying you up and your whole family, all of your prosperity, all of your, just because of a neighborly dispute, right? Where I am really feeling that I'm wronged. Now, if I feel that I can't have anything righted, if you weren't as kind, right, to say, oh, I'm really sorry, I'll get the fence boards back up, I'll replant your garden, I'll give you some more chickens, I'm really sorry, let's shake on it and be happy neighbors. If you weren't that kind, or if you were unable to for some reason, and I was unable to get recompense from you, well, how would I exact revenge? How would I get that recompense? If you're held up in courts and in jail on blasphemy charges, or even worse, if our neighbors all hear that you blasphemed the prophet and come to your home and start, I don't know, kicking in your door, smashing your windows, maybe throwing some lit flames inside your home, then, hey, you know what? You're out of home, and I, as your neighbor, have access to all of this property right next door. It's something that's much more insidious than just racism, you know, a proxy for racism. It's something that can be used to incite this fervor over things that aren't even religious to begin with. And we see from Human Rights Commission and you know, in NGOs going in and looking at this, that this is a way that this is being used in Pakistan and has been. And so when we call for, you know, for an end to blasphemy laws, we're not just talking about the right for someone, a comedian, to go on a public television show and say, you know, that God is dead, or laugh at religious beliefs. We're talking about the rights of people to exist in their own personhood, either religiously or just as themselves.
Right.
At the very least, neighbor, I'm going to want my weed whacker back.
In this particular case, I wouldn't be surprised if the student had gotten in trouble and wanted to get back at his principal.
That's a thing that, from a teacher perspective, is really chilling to me, right? Because there's a lot of reasons that young people can be angered by something that happens in school. When you have something like, I don't know, you missed marks that, you felt your marks fell just below a threshold for getting into a training program,
right,
or into a college acceptance or things like that. There's a lot of possibility for that kind of, I don't know, animosity.
Right. And you're talking about people that haven't had time to fully develop their prefrontal cortex at this point, so they may not be able to consider the full effect of their decision to make this accusation.
Absolutely. Well, I hope that we can continue to push for an end to these kinds of blasphemy codes worldwide. But in the meantime, let's go to Russia. You guys want to finish up with Russia?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A Siberian shaman who'd been trekking to Moscow to exorcise the evil spirit of Putin from the Kremlin was arrested 1,700 miles into his journey. Alexander Gabishev had stated that God and nature were calling him to action in order to set Russia free by performing an exorcism in the country's capital city. He had attracted a group of traveling acolytes in his 6 months on the road. Other shamans had actually vocally opposed Gabishev's aims and called for him to tone down his political messages. It is suspected that Gabishev was arrested on charges of trying to overthrow the Russian government.
Yeah.
So we're probably like, tone it down. Putin will have you killed.
He wasn't just arrested. He was dragged out of his tent and thrown on the ground and then dragged off into a car. It was pretty awful.
Well, that's super dramatic.
Yeah.
The thing that struck me also is he was 1,700 miles into his journey. He was still in Siberia.
Yeah.
Siberia is quite a ways away. Humongous. So you have shamans. It was kind of a really interesting little dive to look into what these shaman in these rural parts of Russia are, the place that they hold within the culture. They're aligned with various elements of Christianity. You say, hey, there's demonic spirits, I need to exorcise them. That's a very like Christian thing, right? You can have the Catholic Church doing exorcisms. But at the same time, you're not ordained by any particular, house of study. You are accepted by the people as someone of spiritual authority.
So they're kind of like proto-Christians. That's actually kind of interesting.
Or para-Christians.
Yeah.
Christian adjacent. I'm not sure exactly. But to say, using religions for proxy, I think that the co-shaman community here is onto something here when he's saying, hey, this guy just really wants Putin to be gone. And he's going to use this particular shaman, Gabishev, is going to use his proclaimed religious authority to say, I want to do political change, but under the auspices of religion. It's a very interesting kind of dynamic.
There have been a lot of protests, and especially in Moscow over the past few weeks because of the election issues there, considering the Putin regime. It's been not good, especially.
Well, and when you mix in different religious beliefs around it, it becomes a super rich morass of ridiculousness. Hey, Luke, Dan, thank you so much for joining me.
Always.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. You can find all our episodes at atheist.radio. You can email us questions at questions@atheist.radio. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Ask an Atheist WA. Call and leave us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC. See you guys next week.